Welcome to the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Jerry Rotoroga, chef in a hat.
And yes, you are, sir. Welcome back to our fabulous kitchen here at 4th of Virginia, second floor of the Hotel Andra.
So fun.
I know.
I'm missing the crowd of supporters, but, you know, we're getting used to it. And I know they're listening and they're reading and they're doing all this beautiful thing on the internet, as they call it.
This is your 2 hours away from COVID. Every week we try to bring you a little escape from the COVID virus. So we're hoping that you're out in your garden, that you're in your kitchen, that you're in your car, wherever you are listening to us, that you're having a great day. You're thinking about food and wine. Your stomach's starting to growl. And you are ready to get rolling on something to eat. Whether it's a Wendy's biscuit sandwich or whether you're making the most beautiful roast duck a l'orange, like we
especially
made last
for
Sunday
breakfast.
Night. Huh?
For breakfast, that's delicious.
How about that roast duck a l'orange?
Yeah, that a la pêche.
A la pêche.
That was delicious.
Yes, it was very beautiful. And many of our listeners were part of the Julia Child Dinner Box series when we started our virtual cooking classes here at the Hot Stove last week.
So. Very fun.
If you haven't joined in yet, go check out the Hot Stove Society .com website, and you can see all the classes that are coming up. I did one last night on crab cakes.
Mm.
I know I do one annually on crab cakes because I wrote a book called I Love Crab Cakes.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember being in it, too.
You are in that book. We got a big show for you today, very full. Dana Kemmerling is going to be here to educate us on salmon habitat rehabilitation projects here in the Puget Sound region. She's been out volunteering for years, and, of course, a small percentage of our Rub with Love salmon rub sales goes to support those projects. Batter up. We're going to talk about all the different fish fry batters, plus tips and tricks for your own fish fry at home. But why do it at home when
you can go to a restaurant?
Seatown is opening next week.
Oh,
as with a fish fry.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We're very excited about it. We did some pop-up fish fries out at the warehouse, the dock. And they were very popular. And our fish and chips, by the way, is fabulous.
I haven't had it, but I would definitely believe it.
Well, there's two things going on. One is our batter is nice and thin, so it gets crunchy. The second is we're using this Blue North cod that is beautifully caught and harvested. And it's so when it fries, it doesn't get all watery. Sometimes when you bite into fish and chips, there's a lot of water on the inside. This stuff is unbelievable. I love it. We're going to keep up with our Pass It Down segment with a favorite father's potato salad. We speak to a New York City high school team behind the new culinary magazine, Pass the Spatula. And, of course, we're going to wrap up the show with the Rub with Love sponsored Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge.
Can't wait.
Who's going to be our challenger today?
I don't know, but we definitely have time to think about this for the next couple of hours. So.
All right, tell me about your taste of the week, chef.
Taste of the week. Duck tenders, caramelized peaches.
Duck tenders.
You know the
I know what the duck tender is, but
so I pick the tenders out and then keep them when I have enough. I make a nice little salad with that.
From a Peking duck or from a Muscovy duck?
Muscovy. I use the Muscovy, the breast, to serve as an entree.
Mm-hmm.
The leg to use as confit. And the tenders, I use them to make a salad. So kind of like thinking in the realm of maybe like a gizzard salad or something like that, you know. And
my favorite. I just sometimes in the middle of summer, I just can't wait to sit down to a gizzard salad.
You like gizzard?
Yeah. No.
Oh, I love gizzard. You don't like that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well,
they're in the cottage cheese realm for me.
No, they're not. The gizzards are delicious. Yeah. Anyway, I regress. Tenders are very tender. I'm sure you would like those. So I soak them I marinate them with some sumac overnight. And then pan-fried in butter, because noblesse oblige.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do duck-fried potato, seared foie gras, and a caramelized peach.
Where's the salad part?
Hold on, I'm not finished.
Oh, okay.
Then I do... Oh, there is no salad. That is a salad.
Oh, I was gonna say.
I'm just kidding. No, you do a nice little gem lettuce. I like the gem lettuce during this time of year. For that purpose, because it cups nicely and it stays with warm food put on top of it, it still stay crispy. And then finish with a little bit of croutons.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. Mm. The sauce, the glaze is made with bourbon and cherry vinegar glaze.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, delicious, Tom.
My two tastes of the week happen to come from my own farm. My wife is the head farmer at Prosser Farm. And she has been in, for years, seed trials. You know, she takes different seeds from different companies, works with Oregon State University. And then the last couple of years, she's been working with Dan Barber's seed company, Row 7, out of New York. And this week, the paste tomatoes that they've been working on for 2 years are out, and they are being sliced and put on top of a serious pie, you know, lots of basil and fresh. But after the pie is cooked, I really hate when people put fresh tomatoes on a pie and then put the pie in the oven. Because then all you're doing is you're leaching the water out of the tomato. You end up with cellulose and a big pile of water.
Plus, it's not that nice of a tomato. I mean,
well, typically it's not, but these are delicious.
Right.
And they're a paste tomato, so they're meaty in a funny way. And so we slice them thin, put them on top of the hot pie after it comes out of the oven so that they're just warmed and they don't lose all their moisture. And they are delicious. I will say they are delicious.
I believe it. So are they... when you call them paste tomato, they're made to be doing tomato paste?
Yeah, they're a heavier, beefier kind of tomato.
Okay, and just made, very dense.
Yeah, we make tomato sauce out of them. Or this is another way to use them because, like I said, they have a good bite to them.
Right.
They're solid. And the other thing that's harvesting this year for the seventh year in a row are her Hannah's Choice musk melons.
Ooh.
And they are so good.
Love
them. I don't know how. We don't have enough, I don't think. Are they on any menu that we have? We don't have enough to kind of put out there.
Because that takes a lot of land, yeah.
Yeah, well, we got plenty of land. We just don't have any farmers. We have a pandemic. But
that's the other problem.
Yeah. But they're, you know, I just had one for breakfast this morning. They are so delicious. And so I would suggest out there, if you can get out this time of year for local cantaloupes or muskmelons, just pick them up. If they're good, you can smell them.
Well,
they have a nice fragrance.
Now they're in season for sure.
Yeah, and then that little kind of golden end where the stem is.
Right.
When that's golden and you can just have a little push of pressure on it, and it gives really the perfect way.
And a good melon, if it's not been refrigerated, will have a scent that will escape. You know,
these, of course, when you pick them warm out of the field, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I want to go back to the pizza crust for 1 minute. I did that pizza crust and you had in Savior Market, Savior Tour. Congratulations, because it's very hard to find pizza crust. I don't do a lot of pizza, but to find a pizza crust that warms up and to be that textural and that tasty, congratulations
to
you.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Appreciate it. Up next, Dana Kemmerling's here. We're going to talk about salmon habitat and what you can do to help add some shade back to our rivers on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And Terry, you know that I have the largest selling salmon rub in the world.
Correct.
And one of the things that we like to do with that is that the people that make the rub and sell the rub, and a lot of our team loves to volunteer on salmon projects. It's near and dear to our heart. You know, we've been fighting against Pebble Mine up in Bristol Bay for years.
And
now,
the fight is not over. Now is more than ever.
Yeah, there's only a week left before the government makes their decision. And luckily, if some big voices have jumped in recently. I don't know why they weren't there 2 years ago, but they're starting to jump in. I'm thankful for it. But anyway, so we sell a lot of salmon rub, and we have a small percentage of that goes to projects around the country. And so I invited Dana, one of our Rub with Love salespeople, really an all-around good human because of her efforts around restoring salmon habitat, to come talk about her projects, to talk about where the money goes for the Alaska Wild Salmon Fund. Maybe I can give you a little update on Bristol Bay, and I'm doing a little gig on the 29th of August that you could tune into. So let's just talk for a few minutes about that. Hi, Dana. Welcome.
Hey, Tom.
Hello,
thanks
Dana.
For having me. Hi, Terry.
So tell us about your Sammamish River project, your Sammamish.
Yeah, absolutely. So out on the Sammamish in Woodinville, Rub with Love and Tom Douglas Restaurants has adopted a site actually right behind the old Red Hook Brewery where several of your employees used to work. We have been volunteering out there for a little over 2 years now. And what we're doing there specifically is ripping out invasives like Himalayan blackberry, reed canary grass. And in February, this past February, we were able to put in over 300 plants and trees that will ultimately fill in and provide shade to help cool the river. The Sammamish has been vastly altered by us humans,
mm-hmm.
and which has made it hot and fast, which reduces the oxygen levels that the salmon desperately need in order to make it through that channel.
Mm-hmm. So. And so, I mean, urbanization is really the death knell sometimes for these rivers. So these other plants, these are the kind of plants that typically hundreds of years ago grew naturally along the river banks.
Exactly.
And would kind of lean over the river a bit and give it shade and give fish a place to congregate. And that is what's missing, right?
Absolutely.
Well, not to mention the speed.
And keep the water cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's super cool. Tell us about where our money that we donate goes to.
So the money from the salmon rub sales is going to the Alaska Wild Salmon Fund. Mm-hmm. They're a fantastic group that is, they're working on all sorts of different issues affecting salmon up in Alaska, but currently top of mind, the biggest push is Pebble Mine, mm-hmm. As you mentioned. And it's dire at this point.
So yes. Pebble Mine is the proposed copper and gold mine in the headwaters of Bristol Bay. And it is the largest open pit mine in the world. And
It would be,
yeah. And it has been under consideration now for 15 years or so. I've been in the fight close to 10 years now. We have spent many, many thousands of dollars, as you know, trying to stop the copper or the pebble mine. And the big issue really is the roads, just like what we're talking about, urbanization of our rivers.
Yeah.
The roads to get to the mine and get the mining stuff out, in and out, are really detrimental to the landscape, the earthscape. That creates a ton of problems. And then once you do mine it, you have this huge open pit where the salmon usually spawn. And then once you do mine it, you have all these tailing ponds, these huge, huge 250 billion gallon tailing ponds that are full of arsenic and iron and bad stuff for fish. That were they to ever break down, which according to the mining company, they are good in perpetuity. We all know how that works.
Yeah.
We've only been alive for a couple hundred years, but these tailing ponds are good forever. And they're built on an earthquake fault. So there's just a lot of things. It's the wrong mine in the wrong place.
Absolutely.
Right? So, oddly enough, even Donald Trump Jr. came out last week and said, you know, we've heard nothing from the government now since the Obama administration stopped the mine. And then the Trump administration put it back into play. And we've heard really nothing positive about stopping the mines in the 3.5 years of this administration.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden in the last week, there's a Corps of Engineers is due to come out with their findings in about 10 days. All of a sudden, large conservation wildlife conservative funders have come out and are really stoking the fire. Even Tucker Carlson, who he and I don't look at the world in the same way. But even he came out and said, this is the wrong mine in the wrong place. And so we're starting to get some traction across party lines, and I love that. And it's I'm super excited that we're going to have a decision and hopefully the right decision.
So. Exactly.
It's nice when the brains get together for the right reason.
Yeah. Well, it turns out a lot of wealthy people that donate to political campaigns like to fish and like to hunt and are concerned about the environment too, you know. So we just hadn't heard from them. That was the frustration.
You know, Pebble Bay is a very, Bristol Bay is a very special place.
Mm-hmm.
There's not other places left like this in the planet. So, you know, it's a very important part to conserve that salmon, the coho, and all those salmon that go and spawn over there.
Yeah, we were just talking, Dana, that you used to be able to walk across the fish on the Sammamish River, right?
Yeah.
Just like you can right now during the run up in Dillingham, in that area, the sockeye run has been 50 million fish strong annually.
Incredible.
A well-managed fishery. And we've let that go down here. We've just chosen to urbanization and chosen not to care enough.
We're destroying salmon habitat down here
Now we're going to try and do it up there, and that really bugs me. And it's for all those who think it's just an Alaska issue, it's not. It's a human race issue.
Absolutely.
It's a humanity issue.
Right.
So...
Well,
it's a constant battle of trying to live with Mother Nature, you know, human being and Mother Nature. We have to just get along, not go against each other. Mother Nature will win, so nobody, if everybody doesn't know the end of the fight, they win, we lose. So,
half the world's supply of sockeye is coming from Bristol Bay. So yeah. anybody who thinks it is just an Alaska issue is mm-hmm. sorely mistaken. It's mm-hmm. everyone's issue.
Right.
So, you know, for a while now, because of COVID, you haven't been able to do your volunteer projects. What are you doing about that now? I heard that you're open again.
We are. I'm so excited. July was our first opportunity to get back into it. We, on our site, we work with Mid-Sound Fisheries Enhancement Group, a local nonprofit that's part of a larger coalition of 14 organizations across Washington. And our site is a little unusual in that most of the time Mid-Sound works with private landowners, but our site is actually on King County parkland. So we're also working with those folks. And I have to say, I was a little skeptical about what our first volunteer event during the pandemic would be like. And it's small. We're very limited. Some of their staff and then just five volunteers.
Uh-huh.
But I was so impressed with how well thought out their plan and approach was for social distancing, masks required, no shared tools, everybody has their own, and sanitizing. It was fantastic, and it felt so good to be outside and back doing something good for the world during this crazy time.
Give me, we only have 30 seconds, where do people volunteer if they want to?
Our events are listed on both the Mid-Sound site, which is midsoundfisheries.org, and also King County Parks, Your Big Backyard. You can see all the different events upcoming in both of those places, and we also share them on Rub With Love social media. So if you have an opportunity and are available, we'd love to see you. We're actually going to be out there this Saturday, and we have dates out there for September and October as well.
Awesome. All right, speaking of fish, batter up. We're going to talk fish and chips when we come back. Thank you, Dana, for all your work on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Thank you.
It's time to fry here on the Hot Stove Society show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat, ready with a fryer.
Ready with a fryer. Chef, are you a fish and chip fan?
Yes, when it's done well. But I've had some mediocre... well, let me just tell you what I don't like about... fish fried that I found not so nice is okay. when the skin is not crispy. I think that.
What do you mean the skin?
The frying batter is not crispy. When you're having that fish and chip that's like kind of mushy as opposed to, or soft as opposed to crispy, that's when I kind of like, because once you've had it crispy, and I like the Japanese style of frying.
The tempura style?
Tempura style, because it's so delicate, light. It does not get in the way of the fish.
Uh-huh.
And also, it does not envelop the fish so much that everything becomes steamy inside and your dough becomes kind of soft.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are little tricks that I don't fry fish very often. But when I do, I'm the first thing I think about is the spice. What am I going to use for spice? Because I'm going to use cornstarch, spice, and a little bit of water. That's all I do for batter.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like my batter, especially if it's a nice piece of fish. So if it's for example, a piece of cod, I'm going to go with probably something that has a slight bit of heat. You know me, I'm not too hot on the heat, but a little bit of it. I'm a fan of fennel. I love ground fennel. And it fries really well. So you take fennel seeds and you grind them, mix it with a little bit of sea salt and a little bit of chili. It could be as nice dried ancho chile or whatever you have on hand. Make a nice powder with that. Mix that with your cornstarch. Add a little bit of water and then verify the seasoning. And then dip your fish into that and then gently put it in the fryer.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other solution is also not too hot so it doesn't burn before it's cooking the fish, but also not too low so it doesn't become a soggy mess and never actually crisp up.
Yeah, you don't want it to be like blonde, I will say. You know,
right.
You don't want it. You want it to get a little bit of browning.
Correct.
On it. Yeah.
Just like anything else, I want it cooked all the way. It's a starch, so I want to make sure that it's cooked all the way, and it's also crispy.
Well, as long as you're going down the Japanese road a little bit, what do you think about? You know, so often when I go out to a Japanese restaurant, I'll get tempura, but I'll get it within like a bowl of soup.
Right.
And that is meant to be soggy, and that's right. That soaks up the broth, and it's just a different.
It's a very different way of using the frying idea because when you're doing a fish and chip, you obviously are not trying to put it in a fish bowl or in a soup bowl. I mean, and So it's, you know, the idea with the vegetable is a little bit different, and it's a complete different, very Japanese style of doing
it. And what about, do you like things like the crispy shrimp rolls, you know, the where they put the fried shrimp in the middle of the tekamaki?
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
I just love that.
Super good. So many ways to serve it.
Yeah, I mean.
We do two different kinds of things at our company. The original Etta's recipe. Mm-hmm. So you say you start thinking about it. I start with the fish is my thing. That, you know, let's just stick with fish. Let's assume that you can do this on oysters or squid or you name it. Right? But let's just think about fish right now.
Right.
So what I try to do is I think about the fish that I'm getting. So I don't want a watery fish.
Correct.
Like, you know, sometimes true cod or ling cod or depending on how it's been caught and handled can be super watery.
Correct.
And so there's this Alaska cod that I really like that's mm-hmm. real meaty. But it's caught by Blue North Seafood, the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And when that fish comes aboard, they shock it and bleed it and kill it. And it comes out super firm, right? There's not a lot of extra water content. It's just really a delicious product. And so that's something that we kind of start with when we think about the fish as well. You know, what's not going to throw? That's why you don't see like a lot of gray sole.
Right.
Or, you know, that's why halibut makes great fish and chips. It's a very lean, dry fish, right?
Yeah, that's also another part that's very important. Not too much water content.
Yeah, yeah, super good. And the salmon makes a good fish and chips, but a lot of times it's too strong for people when it's fried like that. So, whatever. So now we've got our cod. Now you can start a couple of different ways. At Etta's, for years, we took that cod and we brined it in the dill pickle juice. You know, you get a bucket mm-hmm. of dill pickles and it comes in a brine. We would take that very brine and brine our cod in that juice for 2 hours. You don't want to do it too long or it starts to cook the fish, right?
It starts to break
so
it
then
down.
We pull it out, and then we started the breading process, which is one way
so
to
you
go.
You pat it dry before you bread it, right?
Yeah, and then we do the flour, the egg, and the panko crumbs, and that was always the Etta's fish and chips.
Okay.
And delicious. Seasoned it on its own. I think the hardest part is that you have to go a little bit lower fryer temperature when you're using panko because it wants to burn very fast.
It's a very light product. Yeah.
Well, it's bread, and that particular type of bread has sugar in it. Yeah. Anytime you have sugar in a product that's going to be deep fried, even if you have an overly starchy, sugary potato, it gets dark, right?
Correct.
That's why it's hard to fry beets because it's full of sugar.
Correct.
So that's the one that gets deep fried, and I would say you're looking at more in the neighborhood of 330 to 340 degrees rather than 350. The other one that we've been doing recently, Chef Schwartz out at the Warehouse Kitchen, the, you know, Series Takeout.
Sure.
He's been making this for our fish and chip pop-ups, and I've fallen in love with it. And I'm not usually a batter fish and chip person. For some reason, I don't even like when I go to the UK all the time, right? I don't love the fish and chips there because it's all big, greasy batter, and I love that it's a huge chunk of fish, but I don't necessarily love the greasy batter part.
Right.
So I've kind of stayed away from the batter. So this particular batter, he uses equal parts of cornstarch, like you had, rice flour, which mm-hmm. isn't full of gluten, right? So it's has a more crunchy texture.
It fries better.
Develop gluten.
Yeah, it doesn't fry
and then equal parts of that, and then a little bit of AP flour, because you want some stickiness to it.
Right.
And then he just uses a Saison or some strong beer until it is thin enough to dredge your fish through it, right? And then he uses the Rub With Love smoked paprika as his only seasoning.
Right.
Because you can take that fish out of the fryer, right? Now you're at 350 degrees, you drop your fish in. I really like the least amount of AP flour, all-purpose flour, because it wants to get thick and glom on to your batter. It's hard to get your batter thin enough.
It's also hard to cook it all the way. That's the other part. You know, I mean, most likely if you have a thin filet, you're going to overcook your fish just to cook the flour.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the other problem with the AP flour. That's why you try to – a mixture is a very good idea. Does he toast the flour too or no?
No. It's just those three things. It's very simple. This isn't a hard thing. It's not trying to do – you know, so many recipes you read are trying to do club soda or they're trying to do ice water or – all sorts of things. I also like this batter because it's not something you have to remake every hour. Like if you're making a club soda batter or ice water batter, you really do have to say,
last.
it's fine if you're just making one batch, right?
Correct.
But if you're in a business like ours, you have to throw it away every hour and start fresh. And that's just not the case with this particular batter. It holds beautifully and works all day long if that's what you choose to make. But the saison gives it a real interesting umami kind of quality, right? You don't know where it's coming from. You just have this batter that has a lot of flavor that you're not sure how it got there.
A bit of hoppy flavor.
Right, and saison, do you know the definition of saison as far as the kind of beer that is?
No, but saison in French means seasons.
Seasoned? Oh, isn't that interesting?
Seasons, as in spring, as in, summer, fall.
Yeah. But you often hear about Belgian beers being saisons or something. They're a heavier, more sour beer is the way I think of them. Sometimes fruit-based. Yeah, delicious. It just adds a whole nother texture. And then the other thing, let's talk about sauces that go with that.
Right. Dipping sauces. So there is the traditional vinegar, malt vinegar, you know, English style, which I'm okay, but it's not my favorite necessarily for fish, especially with the fish I'm going to use. Now, if you're using spot prawn, I would definitely go with like a quick yuzu kind of idea where you do a little bit of vinegar, light soy. I would go light on the soy, a little bit heavier on the vinegar, lime juice, and then just keep it at that, and then do your quick shrimp, especially if you're doing spot prawn or whatever.
Boy, you
got to
go fast on those.
Oh, yeah. You got to go super
fast. They're probably not even a good thing to put in the fryer, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's...
Unless you're doing something like salt and pepper spot prawns in a Chinese restaurant.
Yes, like salt pepper idea. That's exactly what I was thinking. So you just dip them quickly in that broth, and then eat them like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, heavier, obviously, the traditional, harissa aioli, which is something I make every day. That's always a good mix to go with any kind of fried food.
I hear that, but I don't necessarily agree with you on that particular point, because I don't like adding mayonnaise to fried food. I know tartar sauce is the most popular.
It's not me. It's what people want.
Right. I like adding, that's why I always made that green cocktail sauce down at Etta's, right? So on our crab cakes, because... The acid in the cocktail slots really balances the mayonnaise that's the binder on the crab cake.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Which is what you need. You need acid when you're doing fried food, for sure.
I make a red-eye cocktail, so that's just cocktail sauce with espresso grounds in it. And I love that. I could eat that all day long. So just a reminder, that recipe that I just gave you is good on fish. It's good on shrimp. It's good on squid. It's you name it. Oysters, that's a quick little batter recipe that I think would work out well, or you can come try us out. We're opening reopening Seatown after 5 months of being closed on the 27th of August.
Looking forward to that.
And we're going to do fish and tots down there. So
nice.
Tater tots are my life with pizza spice.
You got some weird stuff over there.
I got some weird stuff. All right, next up, Pass It Down, a beloved potato salad recipe on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Here we go from the Hot Stove Society. It's Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And chef, this is one of our newer segments, and we continue to be impressed with the Facebook notes that we get and the Instagrams and all that sort of thing, where we're getting people's stories about recipes that are super important to them, because we have a saying around here at the Hot Stove, which is, don't let the recipe box die with you. Make sure you pass it down. And, of course, we all know that the recipe is just part of that tradition, right?
Correct.
The recipe box is really...
It's a treasure.
It's a treasure. It's family lore. It is family celebrations. It's all the things you make every Christmas and Thanksgiving. And so the recipe box is really important, that it's how you make certain things, how you teach your kids what your grandma taught you, right?
So, yeah, and the reason it's so rich is not a money value. It's a sentimental value.
Yeah.
That's why it's so precious.
We've invited people to go to Hot Stove, Madeline's going to tell us about how to do that and share your family heirlooms, your family recipes. And we have a little story from one today.
We do. Thank you. We had a woman who reached out to us on our Facebook. She is a listener and longtime fan of the show, Alana Hamilton. She has a beloved potato salad recipe that she got from her father, who ended up stealing it from his mother. And it's actually a really cute story. She says it's as cute as well as it's delicious. He learned the recipe from his mother And each time he made it, he just realized that it just didn't taste the same as the way that his mom made it. And he kept on trying to sneak a peek and figure out how she made it, what was the secret ingredient. And one time he ended up sneaking into the kitchen. He followed her in there, and he saw that she took a bottle of apple cider vinegar and poured a splash behind the, quote, bat wing of her other arm. And that's when he figured out that that was the special secret ingredients. The best part about this story is, you know, they were adamant to use this in and put the salad, serve it at events in the largest yellow Pyrex bowl that they had. And she actually went out and found a large yellow Pyrex bowl so she could make it for her family, because she said it just, she felt like it tastes better in this yellow
Pyrex.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's what grandma had. That was passed down to her father. They couldn't find the original Pyrex bowl that he used, so before she even started making this recipe, she wanted to make sure she had the same bowl, which I find wonderful. Unfortunately, Alana's father passed away just this last April, but the last time they all made it together was over 4th of July holiday, I believe, in 2018 is what she told me. And since then, they've been trying to recreate it, but they wanted some guidance from both you two on how to update it, maybe modernize it a little bit. And the thing that Alana told me, you know, speaking of that Pyrex bowl, she likes to bring this salad to large gatherings. And when we're able to have large gatherings again, is there a version she can bring that doesn't have a use of eggs? There's a couple people that she knows that might have an egg allergy, and maybe making two that one people could eat if they did have it. So that's
You can always
recipe.
Buy a second Pyrex bowl on eBay, because I know sometimes they're just not available, but yeah. eBay, Pyrex is a very hot commodity on eBay. Yeah. I've bought them, and they can be a lot of money, too.
Yeah, yeah. Great. So
the more,
great
the older they are.
Yep.
So, Chef, if you were to take this salad, so let's just say I personally, you know, I find it funny that somebody's being secretive about a recipe. That's never, I've always wanted to share it and teach it. And the idea that somebody's making that recipe when I'm dead and gone is really kind of cool to me.
I know.
So that's a little funny part of the story. If you were, if it were me, I would make that traditional recipe every time and right. buy that second bowl, maybe make the second bowl blue.
Yeah.
So this is grandma's version in the yellow bowl, and then this is how we've kind of updated it, and this one doesn't have eggs in it. So.
And you could use Peruvian potato.
Yeah. Aren't all potatoes from a Peruvian?
Well, purple Peruvian potato is what I meant to say.
So how would you take the eggs out? Now, that's five or six eggs in this recipe to six potatoes. You've taken a lot of volume out of here.
That's a lot of eggs.
Yeah, it's a lot of eggs, but it's also a lot of volume out of the salad. So you're going to have to double your potatoes,
yeah.
let's just say. And so where do you go from there?
Well, I would definitely, first of all, she needs to remove the potato, the eggs and the mayo. She has mayo in there, too.
Well, yeah, depending on the mayo. Some doesn't have eggs, but you remember, that's a good point to remember to look at your mayo ingredients.
Right, make sure then your mayo doesn't have eggs. Mm-hmm. If it does have eggs, just make a nice little mustard vinegar dressing kind of vinaigrette kind of idea with mustard, so it would be binded. And then use that as your seasoning agent, you know. And in everything she has in that potato salad, definitely the onion diced, it says not Walla Walla because it's a little bit too mild. I think that's a very good point. I use red onion in my potato salad.
Mm-hmm.
I love diced red onion because they have a good crunch. They stay crunchy, and they also have a good flavor. So that could be one more thing. The thing that I'm missing the most in that potato salad that I would definitely update with is fresh herbs. It's the middle of summer. The garden is full of herbs. I mean, and I'm talking not rosemary or sage. I'm talking parsley, basil, chives.
Tarragon, all these soft herbs.
All
right?
These beautiful soft herbs. You just take a whole bunch of it and chop it and put it or sizzle it and just slice it and then put it into your potato salad. And that would give it a very, very nice, fresh, appealing side to it.
And if you wanted to get rid of the mayonnaise, let's say you couldn't find one. I know there's eggless mayonnaise out there.
Right.
But just use olive oil, right?
Yeah,
with your mustard, right? So then you don't have to worry about making an emulsion into a mayonnaise.
Good olive oil. And if you don't have any red onion, you could. If you have shallots, chopped shallots is always delicious too. It's a little bit, you know, pungy. It's got a little bite to it. But also, one thing they don't have in their potato salad that I've learned to like is you render some bacon and not... I know that some people make super dry, crisp bacon. I'm much more onto the, a little bit, keep it a little chew on it. Thicker bacon, a little chew, and then put that in your potato salad.
Mm.
after it cooled off a little bit. You know, you don't want to put it hot in there.
Now it's sounding a little bit more like German potato salad.
Well, yes, a little bit. You're right. You're right. You're right. And but I think that kind of potato salad is delicious to bring to a crowd. Mm-hmm. And, of course, if it's vegetarian, you make a third bowl that would be orange with no bacon in it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that all those things are a good idea. I'm going to send Alana Hamilton a jar of my shallot mustard because I think that's you said add more mustard, and we make a delicious shallot mustard. So look for that in your mailbox, Alana, if you would. Some toasted shallot mustard from the Tom Douglas brand. And in your recipe, it says you'll use more than you think when it comes to apple cider vinegar. That's what I would say when you look at this whole recipe. When you double your potatoes, you're going to need to triple your dressing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the eggs don't soak up as much potato as or dressing as your potatoes are
Correct.
Going to. So I would really, you know, those potatoes, they'll soak up everything you can throw at them.
And if you make four times the amount of dressing and you put it in the jar and keep it in the fridge, it's fine. You can reuse it within the next week.
Yeah.
For something else. So it is not an issue.
Well, that all sounds delicious. I totally agree, all the things you've added, but I'm going to send Alana Hamilton a jar of my toasted shallot Dijon mustard.
Great idea.
Because I love it, and it's one of my favorite ingredients to really kind of give a base to a vinaigrette. So, yeah, Madeline, anybody else send in some recipes?
We do. We have quite a bit. And we also, I wanted to follow up, we did have an update from Brian Cunningham, who sent us his mom's lasagna recipe last
yes.
week. He did say there was a typo. Remember, we were talking about an 8-ounce can of tomatoes,
uh-huh. yeah.
and he did say there was a typo. It's supposed to be 28 ounces. he said Julie, his wife, said it was his way of intentionally giving an incomplete recipe,
sabotage.
Like all seasoned chefs do, is what he said.
Bravo so, to the wife.
Exactly.
Well, if somebody wants to pass down one of their recipes, where would they go?
Yeah, so you're welcome to send us you're welcome to send us the recipe to our Facebook account at Hot Stove Radio, or you can also send them to our new email address, hotstoveradio@tomdouglas.com. I'll keep an eye out for them.
Coming up in our second hour, we'll talk to one of the founders of Pass the Spatula, a magazine from New York City's Food and Finance High School on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hey, Chefy.
Hey,
what's
Tom.
What's going on over there?
Same old. I'm smelling chilies in the air.
We're supposed to be socially distanced, and we are.
We are definitely distanced.
Yes, exactly. So, welcome back. We're going to talk chilies for a bit. First of all, we want to make sure you don't run to the store en masse. You know, we have a very large audience, and we don't want them all at the central markets all at the same time.
Okay.
All right.
I'm pretty sure then there is a staggered doorman that will help you do that.
Okay, deal. We've invited Joe Pulicicchio, Director of Produce at Central Markets. There's one in Mill Creek that I've been to. There's Paulsbo I've been to, Shoreline Central, Ballard Market. Where else do you have, Joe? Where are all your stores?
Well, we have Lakemont Market. That's up. That's our latest little store in that community. And then on Bainbridge Island, the Town and Country Market.
Oh, the Town and Country,
Island.
That's right.
Yeah.
Where's Lakemont?
Yeah. Lakemont would be heading out I-90, take exit 13, and go right up to the top of the hill, and it's right there.
Oh, Sammamish.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. That's right.
All right, so I have been a big fan of the Hatch Chili program at Central Markets for a long time. In the beginning, you used to have roasters outside. I'm not sure if you still do that, but you can buy the chilies roasted in like just in a little foam tray, plastic covered. You can buy. I'm a big fan of the Hatch Chili bratwurst that they sell there.
Some things are a little different this year.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
So we have, you know, the COVID situation and the extreme, you know, it's been a lot of pressure on the staff and the team and all the extra sanitation that practices we put in place over the last, you know, it's just been really trying. So we elected not to actually roast at the store this year.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking forward to bringing back the roasters. You know, it's a huge event. People line up, and we were concerned about social distancing and, you know, what are we doing? Are we attracting a crowd to something that might be a problem?
Mm-hmm.
So we elected not to actually physically roast in the market this year. It's a shame because people love it, and man, that smell just makes you hungry.
Awesome. Such a celebration.
What we did is, it's a huge celebration about a very specific food, flavor, and eating experience. But we did source a frozen, very clean hatch chili that's pre-roasted. Got great buy on that. So it's freezer ready, 1 pound bags. They're outstanding. And we are selling the fresh hatch chilies by the case and by the pound at an extreme value. Just, you know, actually doing it in part. If you would like to go home and roast hatch chilies, we just wanted to make an extreme deal this year and let people have some fun doing it themselves if they wanted to do that and or provide the other options. So yeah, we do have our hatch brats at Shoreline. We have hatch burgers. I think we're doing hatch mac and cheese. I think we've got a hatch cornbread out there. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It's going to be great.
So if I wanted to roast some chili and I buy the fresh one that you're selling, what's a quick process to do this at home?
The quickest way to do it, what I recommend is doing it outside and do it on your barbecue. The hotter the barbecue, the better. You want it hot because you don't want to bake the chili. You want to actually flame roasting is the best. But if you can't get your barbecue hot enough with your propane barbecue, they'll both will work. And the reason not to do it in the house is because those vapors from those hatch chilies will make your eyes water. And it will also, your home will, you can do it in your oven, but I don't recommend it because it's going to stink up the place a little bit. So
when you open outside. The door of that oven, you're definitely going to get a whole whiff of it.
Oh, yeah. And so outside it smells great. It's a great activity in the backyard. It takes some time. And you have to just get your grill hot and you put them on there. What you're trying to do is get that chili to char and blister, but you don't want to really bake it to where it turns to mush. So the chili, as you turn it, it blisters and it gets a char on it. What you're trying to do is char that skin without burning through the meat of the pepper. So you got to, as it chars, you turn it until you got a nice char. Sometimes practice with one or two first. Get it down to where you do. Once you got it down, it takes a little time. And then when they come off, you want to take them off. Now, some people take and they take that chili and they just wipe it with a cloth to wipe off that char off the outside and get the skin off. But I recommend that what I've been telling people is that you just freeze them with the char on. Mm-hmm. You just freeze them or use them. And then when you take them out, depending on how you want to use them, might determine how much of that char you want to take off.
Right.
So if you're putting them in eggs, you may want to take off a little bit more because that char gives it some flavor.
Of course.
You know, so depending on the dish you're making may determine how much. I mean, you're going to it's going to slip right off whether you froze them or do it before you freeze them. So it's up to people how they want to do it. But really, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, it is pretty simple. It's just like you're roasting a red pepper, right, for an Italian salad or something, same idea. I, you know, it's not often you hear people say, don't worry about the char so much, and I'm just such a big believer in that. It is, if you say by Rick Bayless's Frontier of Salsas or something like that, he has varieties that are fire roasted, right? Or if you look at canned tomatoes, they're fire roasted because some of that char is left on those products, and it really does add a nice barbecue flavor to what you're making.
Yeah, it gives a little smoky flavor and you know, it depends on your use. So, and also if you leave a little bit on that, like I like to take them, you know, when I pull them out. And by the way, if you buy a medium pepper, you know, the longer it's in your freezer, the hotter it gets.
Really?
Oh yeah. They'll heat up the longer you save them. But, you know, a medium pepper is not too bad in heat. If you like heat, a medium pepper is a great one to go with, a medium heat range pepper, because it, you know, you can just add more peppers if you want more flavor and more heat. But if you really want it hot, real hot, without, you know, overdoing the pepper flavor, then get a hot. Mild, we've had a tough time this year getting any mild peppers to add. And if you're just looking for flavor and no heat, mild would be where I go. But, you know, you can almost live with a medium heat pepper because you just put less in.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
you can control that range of heat based on your preference.
Yeah, and hatch chilies generally aren't that spicy anyway. So we only have a minute left. Right. Anything else you want to tell us about your hatch program?
Well, we're going to do it again next year, so we look forward to doing it next year. We hope we're going to be able to do it next year. And we apologize we couldn't roast in the stores this year. And, you know, if you want an idea what to do with them, if you're going to be grilling burgers on the weekend, roast a hatch chili, wipe that char off to the level you feel you like it, split it down the middle the long way, and just put that right on top of the burger. You don't have to chop it up and put it in the meat. Just put it roasted right on top of the burger like you would a tomato. And that's an authentic Hatch chili burger.
Absolutely. Mm. A little, maybe even a little grated Beecher's cheese on top. Who knows?
There you go. Or stuff them with cotija cheese.
Oh, and, love that, too.
Yeah.
That's all right. That has been Joe Pulicicchio from Shoreline Central Market and the whole Central Market group around our fair city. So enjoy your Hatch chili season, and let us know what you think when you've roasted them yourself. Let us know how they came out here at the Hot Stove Radio Show. Up next, we have questions from you, our fabulous listeners, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for questions from you, our faithful listeners, on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Hot Stove Society.
I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Tom Douglas. And Madeline Dow, our producer, is going to take a look and has written down some questions from you. And Madeline Dow, our producer, take it away.
We had a few listeners chime in. They had some questions. Our cooking questions and kitchen conundrums is what we sent out. We had a listener, David Harris, who is looking for some tips on savory uses for fresh figs, is what he's asking your advice on.
Fresh figs.
Those purple figs.
Savory.
Yes, savory purple figs. I would cure them. It's a, you know, something that we've started doing. Well, you take the figs and you put them in salt, a combination of 66% salt, 33% sugar, just like you would do a cure. And then a few herbs in there, fresh tarragon this time of year is delicious. Put a lot of tarragon in there and then put that over your figs, cut in half, your purple figs, face up, and then let them cure for a couple of days and then rinse them off, cold water, and then pat them dry. And then now you have a cured fig that has got a beautiful salt and sweet flavor with the tarragon flavor. And then you can use that as a garnish to your cheese tray. You can use it on the side of a grilled meat. If you take it, you can slice it very thin. You don't, obviously, one.
Chef, just can I ask, what is that giving you that a fresh fig doesn't? What are you getting? What's the difference?
That salty flavor that you don't have on a fresh fig. Mm-hmm. You know, fresh fig is very sweet.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to do is to cut down that sugar and add some salt to it and have a different use of purpose for that. So when you're eating it, you get a little bit different of a mouthfeel.
Okay.
That's all. It's just another way to use the fig.
Right. Sounds good. I would also suggest, you know, a very popular thing is to wrap it in prosciutto and pop it on the grill.
Yeah.
One of the favorite, down at Lola, one of the favorite dips that we made for our pita spreads was 50% figs, and either dried or fresh, so this works either way, and 50% Kalamata olive puree or paste. And mix those two together. Again, you get right back to where you were, the salty along with the sweet, and serve that with a griddled pita bread or something delicious in that one. And I personally, I'm more of a Greek-style pita bread than the, let's say, sometimes it's called Iranian-style pita bread or the Arabic-style pita bread. One is more of a pita pocket with the steam center, and the other is a little bit more, the Greek style is more bread-like.
Right.
So, all right, Madeline, who else do we have?
That sounds delicious. Listener Emily Sakuma says, my cherry tomato plant is sagging beneath its load. What can I do with them before they start slitting, but I am not able to eat tomatoes raw?
Well, the reason they would start splitting is that you're overwatering them. So that's, you can do that, number one. Number two, I would split them in half and do a slow oven roast on them and just dry them out and just let them lay in there for a day or two until they become almost like tomato jerky. Then I like to pack them in olive oil and save them for every use you can imagine. They are great in salads. They're great in spaghetti sauce, you know, where you do just a chopped cherry tomato and anchovy and capers and olives and make a nice little chunky tomato sauce out of that. They're just good in so many things.
You can also confit them in olive oil. So basically you cut them in half. If you have lemon verbena or something of lemon scent in your herbs, even a little bit of mint, put the whole thing together and cook it very, very, very slowly. You know, you're going to be cooking it, but very slowly, like a confit idea. And then your tomatoes are going to come and be imbibed with that olive oil. At the end, you can just puree the whole thing if you want, or just keep them like that in a jar and cool them off and then use them, like Tom was saying, with the sun dry. You can use it whenever you want in the next couple of days or even a week or two if you keep it in your refrigerator. It's gonna congeal, but you just take a spoon and go in there and then grab, you know, whatever you need for the dish you're making. It's delicious, picks up the lemon verbena flavor super well.
And it'll last longer if they're covered in olive oil.
Right. I mean, they will definitely last longer. So they're now basically like a comfy idea in your refrigerator. Yeah. And it's a good way to get rid of a lot of tomatoes.
I think there was a cook at Serious Pie, a Serious Takeout in Ballard. She made a pesto made out of sun-dried tomatoes for a pizza base. And oh, so good.
So good.
Okay, listener, Russell Nash, this is for you, Terry. I just started a garden. What would be the most practical herbs that will grow in the Northwest for all of my cooking needs?
Well, I can guarantee you that rosemary and sage you cannot kill unless you really are like somebody special. Because, I mean, even
you'd
in the
you'd have to be Harry Potter. Yeah. You'd have to be Voldemort to kill.
I mean, it grows by itself. Mint is another one but keep it in pots. You know, keep those in pots. And then,
Tell them why. The reason is in your garden.
Mint is like arugula. If you put it in your garden, you'll never get rid of it for the rest of your life. And it spreads really nicely. Like if that's what you're looking for, it's going to be great. But otherwise, you'll have too much mint on your hands. So, mint, and then go into the annual of like basil, chives. That's more like early summer. Now, at the season we're in, I would definitely focus on rosemary, sage. You know, the hardier and thyme. Obviously, you can't have a garden without thyme because that's against the law. And then if you can, buy a bay leaf tree. Fresh bay leaf is so much better and it's so much different, not better. It's very different. And when you buy it, try to find a laurel. There is laurel and there is bay. Laurel is the Greek original bay, basically, and bay is from California.
We pick from our bay leaf year round.
It's been in
a pot in our front yard for 15 years.
Yeah.
And we still pick at it.
And it grows well.
We need one, yeah.
Make sure you buy a bigger pot so the thing give it a little room to grow. You'll have a 5-6 foot tree within a couple of years, and then you'll have more bay leaves than you can possibly think, and you'll never buy another dry bay leaf.
Yum.
So good.
We did have a listener follow up regarding, Tom, your comment on creating an herb salt at home and the best tricks to do that. I think someone was looking for a little bit more specifics on the ratio and what you recommend.
Right. Well, if you have time, and I don't mean the herb time, but I mean the T-I-M-E time, I would say that you don't have to even do anything to it. You just put the salt and the herb together and just let it sit. Like you do for vanilla sugar, right, where you put the vanilla bean pod in the sugar container. And in a week or two, the whole batch of sugar tastes like vanilla. Same thing with salt. If you just put a sprig of rosemary in, you might want to bruise it a little bit, but if you just put a sprig of rosemary in a tub of salt, it'll taste like rosemary salt. If you don't really have time, T-I-M-E, then I would say get out your mortar and pestle and bruise up your rosemary and then just mix in your salt. If you really don't want to do anything like that, take out your spice grinder, your coffee grinder. I use a spice grinder as my spice grinder. I have both. But then just put the rosemary and the salt in the spice grinder. And you end up with more of a green salt, but also a more powdered salt.
Right.
And so you have to be careful when you sprinkle that on that you don't put too much. I think we're used to using our fingertips for salt. And when it's powdered, you just don't realize how much is there.
And also when you use fresh herbs, it does have a limit in life. I mean, fresh herb will eventually mold if you don't use it for like 2 months and leave it on your counter. Where if you dry the herbs first, like if you take your rosemary, your sage, whatever you're doing, and you dry it in your kitchen for like a couple of weeks and it's totally dry, then you crush that and you mix with your salt and that has no time limit, basically.
Right. It's hard for anything to grow in a bowl of salt, I will say, as far as
it is,
goes. But
yeah, it just depends on how you do. If you're just crushing it, that's what I was referring to.
The thing I wanted to go back to, though, when they were talking about mint, and we said, don't plant it in your yard, plant it in the pot. I think mint is one of those underutilized herbs that people just don't use in a savory way very much. Whether it's tzatziki or whether it's in your salad, whole leaves in your salad.
Just don't use as much as you would basil.
It's so awesome. And I never realized how much I loved it until I started going to Vietnamese restaurants and you get mint in everything, right?
Yeah.
And so it's great.
It's a great answer and it's always the bite then you go, oh, what is that? That's delicious.
Up next, we're going to chat with Michael Stanton in New York City from Pasta Spatula Magazine on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society. I'm Tom Douglas. Here we are at Cairo Radio.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
Nice to see you, chef.
Nice to see you as well.
We are in the middle of our second hour. We have Michael Stanton coming up from Pass the Spatula magazine from the Food and Finance High School in New York City. We have a kitchen question or conundrum that we would like to answer for you. Just, Maddie, people just go to our Facebook page and send in their questions, right?
Yep.
And that's at Hot Stove
Radio.
.com, right? Hot Stove Radio.
It's just Hot Stove Radio on Facebook.
On Facebook. It's hard for me.
I know.
These things are hard for me.
I understand.
Yeah. Of course, we're going to wrap up the show with our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge, for which I'm sure I will get crushed today, but somebody's going to win a nice Rub with Love spice rub pack, so I'm looking forward to that. Right now, let's jump over to New York City, and let's talk to Michael Stanton of Pass the Spatula magazine. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you all for giving me this opportunity.
Absolutely. Tell us about Pass the Spatula magazine and your involvement.
Yeah. So Pass the Spatula was a magazine that we all came up with the idea of in school. The chefs in our school, they kind of already had an idea of highlighting chefs of color and just giving praise to the minorities in the world. And then obviously this outbreak hit. So then they had to start brainstorming, and then they got in contact with Cherry Bomb. And then they, from there, we just started brainstorming ideas and just creating all this wonderful content and releasing so much creativity into one product that we hope to share with the world within this week because it's being shipped as of now.
Yeah, congratulations. Cherry Bomb, is that a financing effort?
No, Cherry Bomb is actually, they can help finance, but they also feature women chefs and women in culinary and networking, and it's awesome. They have a blog and email blast. It's a cool site.
Okay, cool.
And Michael,
I thought you missed something. Sorry.
No, that's okay. If you want, can you tell us a little bit about, I don't know anything about the Food and Finance High School in New York City. What does that entail, and how can we go? That's what I want to go.
So our high school is right in the middle of Manhattan. It's on 50th Street, right next to Times Square and Columbus Circle. And it's mainly just focusing on the kids who want to have a career in culinary arts, whether it's cooking in the kitchen, owning a restaurant, if they're interested in hospitality management, we just open up a program for those students that I was grateful to be a part of last year, and a whole bunch of different stuff. Like they give connections to so many different people with their food education fund, and we have so many events that we are able to be a part of, and internships that they give us connections to. So it's a really good school to be a part of, and a program that I'm proud to participate in.
You know, a lot of these schools, especially the VOTEC ones, have places where you can actually visit and eat some of the food that the students are making. Is that an opportunity at the Food and Finance High School?
Yes, definitely. That was a part of our hospitality program that was connected with our culinary arts and our baking program. We all joined together during the last two semesters of our school, and we were just opening like a luncheon pop-up restaurant in our dining lab that was recently just renovated. And we were like a whole bunch of different people coming in, people that were from the PTA and the UFT. And then we had people from the restaurant associates and people from Goya and parents and friends of the people who are part of the program and students, like students' parents. And like we could just invite anybody to the event, and all the students had the opportunity to be waiters, bussers, expediters, sous chefs, being able to cook on a line, mm-hmm. and be able to just have a feel of what an actual restaurant service is like.
And how long is the program? How many semesters?
Well, the program is one semester, and it's supposed to be a new set of students each semester. So the first semester, it was originally just for juniors, and they were picked out of the people who they knew like were the best fit for that class and that course. And from that semester on, we just like most of that semester was mainly training and like preparing us, like also using the eCornell online program to get a certificate of service excellence. And we just used that, I think our first pop-up was September 26th, if I have that date correct. And from there, we just had pop-ups every 2 weeks and sometimes I think there was one that was like 1 week apart. And like we just joined together through all the junior classes to create a very exciting and interesting experience for everybody that came to the school those days.
Did you learn anything about other kids and their ethnic background through the food that they were preparing? Were you allowed to have that kind of creativity?
Yeah, definitely. We all agreed on a menu. Like most of the times the chefs would come up with a menu, but we would also give our take on it, anything that we will want to add. Some students, I know they had asked if they wanted to bring like their own rice that they wanted to, or if they could bring something from the supermarket that they wanted to add to the dish. So that was definitely something that I like seeing from the chefs, to give the students the opportunity to be more involved in the process.
I just think, Chef, and you know how I feel about this, but getting people around the table and sharing food from your own personal history, your culture, sharing why you eat the way you eat is really a great way to get to know each other.
More food, less war. Mm-hmm. I'm all about it. That's absolutely a fabulous idea.
So, Michael, this pasthespatula.com and the Pass the Spatula magazine is available for the public to get. Is that true?
Yes, it is. It has been available for pre-order since last month, if I'm getting that correctly. And we sold an astounding amount of copies. I'm shocked that this many people want to support our project that we've been able to accomplish with Cherry Bomb. And it's just amazing to see the physical copy. I just got it actually in the mail this week, and I was excited to see it for the first time, everybody's creativity and hard work put into one project. It's been amazing to see. And everybody can order the magazine online at pastthespatula.com, as you said. And hopefully there will be a digital copy available once all the magazines are being shipped out. And I have been able to have the opportunity to be involved in the distribution process since they have given me the role of distribution director. So I've been able to see every single person order the magazine, and just to see the records and the statistics go up, and to see everybody's support that's been around.
So what do you think you're going to do with all that beautiful knowledge you're acquiring right now?
What's your idea of a future?
Well, for me, I'm just really looking forward to going to college, getting a bachelor's degree, hopefully in restaurant management or something similar to that, and just working myself up in the industry through restaurants and like opening businesses. Like I just recently started like a small catering business kind of for my family just to educate them on different cuisines and cultures. Like I've been able to transform the money that some of my relatives have gave me, and like just using the knowledge that I've gained from the program where I was recently just a part of in school, the restaurant management program, and also stuff that our teachers have taught us to just try to push myself into gaining more experience. And so I can be able to provide that information when I'm actually looking for serious jobs and like just putting myself up in the industry.
So did any of your family member come up with and give you some good old recipe from the family heirloom?
My mother's side of the family, we're all Honduran and Dominican. So we have that, like in between my grandma and my mother and my aunts and the family, since we're all just a big family because my great grandmother has so many kids. So it's just been, yeah. So I just kind of started asking questions at a young age. I started with my mom and then my grandma, and then I started cooking from then, and that's how I got interested in the school once I heard about it. And ever since then, I just keep observing them as they make their dishes and then try to make it along with them or for them. So it's been amazing to see that process unfold.
Well, Michael, it's been super fun to get to know you a little bit over the phone. Michael Stanton's been our guest. He's with Pass the Spatula magazine at pastthespatula.com. You can buy a copy. You can You can also follow them on Instagram at Pass the Spatula. Thank you so much for being part of our show. We appreciate it, and most success to you. I think you're going to do just fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Chef, you know, that is one area of the world that I think needs more attention, which is VoTech.
Yeah.
And getting people skills that they need for the day-to-day work.
Correct.
Not everyone needs to be a nuclear scientist, right?
So not everybody can be.
Right. So I think vocational tech is really the answer to many of our needs here in society. Up next, it is Food for Thought Tasty Trivia right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. Tom Douglas here.
Derry Rotiro, the chef in the hat here.
It's time for our Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge. And Dana Kemmerling, our sales manager for Rub With Love, is here to talk trivia.
And to try to
she
kick
thinks
us
somehow
down.
Or another she's going to kick our butt today.
Well,
at least that's what she was talking off.
You know, first timers have beginner's luck.
She's probably going to deny it now, but during the break, she was just, man, you guys are in trouble today. Welcome Larky. Back to the show, Dana.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, Tina Knoll, as you know, has left the show, and so Madeline Dow is our replacement for her. She's temporary until we find someone better.
Madeline,
don't take that from me.
It's a love fest here.
As you know, Tina Knoll has left the show, but Madeline Dow has taken over as producer of the radio show. So she works with us and is going to administer our quiz today. Hi, Maddie.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. We are here doing our tasty trivia brought to you by Rub With Love. So it's excited to have you here. We're playing today for listener Cheryl Forrester, who commented and sent in her favorite spice last week. We had so many comments. People love cumin and Johnny's. That was a top Johnny's spice.
Johnny's seasoning salt?
Johnny's seasoning salt. It was very popular.
Every Costco I go into, it's floor stacked on pallets.
Well, there's a lot of fans. Yeah. Our listeners love them some Johnny's spice, let me tell you. we're going to be sending her an awesome Grill Master set from Rub With Love, which includes a jar of steak rub and both of our Kansas City and Ancho Molasses barbecue sauces together on a cedar plank. It's a very cool gift.
Nice.
So, Thierry will be going first. Are you ready, sir?
You said you were going to send her a jar, but she has to win right now. Whoever wins
will be paying for the shipping charges.
Yeah, there you go.
That's awesome. All right, I stopped.
Okay, Tabasco is made in which U.S. state?
That's easy. Come on.
I thought it was not made in the state, but I'm going to go with New Mexico.
Louisiana.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Seriously,
you learn something new every day. Okay.
See, I did not know that.
What major U.S. multinational company is named after a character from Moby Dick?
Yeah, I'm a...
It's a coffee company that's quite popular in town here.
Wow, that's unbelievable right now.
The Starbucks company.
Correct, Starbucks.
Oh, I love it.
That's why it's hard to win on this show, because Madeline plays favorites.
According to experts, what type of alcohol goes best with salty, fatty foods? Champagne, beer, cider, or red wine?
Red wine. That's wrong. Many people say that. They go, oh, I want salty food. I'm going to have some red wine. I'm like, no.
No.
I go with champagne.
That is correct. You and Mariah Carey.
Nutty, and...
Delicious.
Nutty and acid.
By the way, that was wrong.
No, it's not champagne?
It is champagne.
Yeah, but you said red wine.
He was commenting.
No, I was commenting on many people.
Oh, my God,
said
Dana.
That.
How are we ever going to have a chance? Jesus.
I'm trembling.
Okay, paprika is sometimes referred to as the red pepper from where?
Hungary.
Correct. Which U.S. city is also the name of a soft cheese brand?
Brand or cheese?
Philadelphia.
Brand.
Correct.
Philadelphia cream cheese.
I think he snuck a look at mine. That's what I'm saying.
Three out of five.
That's pretty good.
Oh, boy.
We'll see how Dana does. How about that?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Dana, you're up next. True or false? One fresh, medium-sized green chili pod has as much vitamin C as oranges.
True.
That is correct. What is the minimum time required to age Scotch whiskey?
10 years?
3 years, actually. That was going to be for Tom, but he already knows those answers. Which meat is traditionally served with rosemary?
Beef.
No, lamb.
Lamb.
Henna. Salmon.
Neapolitan ice cream is made up of strawberry, vanilla, and what other flavor?
Chocolate.
Correct.
She knows the ice cream. I like it.
Childhood staple.
It's true. What is mixed with chocolate to make ganache? Cream, milk, butter, or water?
Cream.
That is correct. Nice work. 3 out of 5 for you. Okay, Tom, bringing up the rear here.
I thought that was 4 out of 5. Was that only 3 out of 5?
Got 2 wrong.
I missed lamb and something else.
What kind of whiskey traditionally goes into a Manhattan?
Oh. You're giving this guy that?
Bourbon.
Rye.
Rye.
Is that correct or false?
I got it wrong. Sorry to make you happy.
Syrup. Syrup from raw sugar is known by what name?
Syrup from raw sugar is known by what name? Molasses.
Correct.
Don't act so surprised.
Doing so well. Which country is known for its chili crab? China, Japan, Singapore, or Malaysia?
Boy, they all sell it it's like on every menu in Hong Kong. China, Singapore, Malaysia, or
Japan.
Japan. Well, it's not Japan. So I'm going to go Malaysia.
Singapore,
yeah. They all sell it. You look it all over. It's very popular.
That's so delicious, yeah. Though.
I would have not been able to guess any of it.
This is in honor of this week. James Beard, Julia Child, Joyce Chen, Edna Lewis, and Edward Philippe Rojas Lombardi are all celebrity chefs immortalized on limited edition what?
PBS?
Stamps.
Like honor roll what? Stamps. Oh, yeah.
U.S. stamps.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize Julia had a stamp.
There were, I believe, a commemorative set of famous celebrity chefs.
Okay. Why didn't Chef Terry get a stamp then?
You know, it's weird. Madison Valley.
Because I'm not dead yet. You only get a stamp once you're dead.
The first major U.S. aerosol food product was Cheese Whiz, Spray Spam, Olive Oil, or Ready Whip?
It's either Ready Whip or Cheese Whiz. I'm going to go with Cheese Whiz.
Ooh, it's Ready Whip.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think
aerosol spam.
Dana and her lovely team gets to ship this.
No, Dana won. So
she won, so then we'll pay for it. We got it.
All right. I'll pack
this
it
tasty
for you.
Trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. Look for Rub With Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop, or find them online at tomdouglas.com/shop. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook and look out for our new name, Hot Stove Radio. You're listening to Hot Stove Radio on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team at Hot Stove Radio, Madeline Pennington and Amy Richardson. Sound and production by Mark Goodnow from the Production Foundry. And our editor is Sean, Don't Call Me Del Torre. Also remember, if you miss any episode of Hot Stove Radio on Cairo 97.3, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for listening and have a fabulous weekend.